If you are empathic, or even if you aren't, you are going to love today's show. You will get to hear the wisdom and good advice of another fellow empath who also happens to be a dear friend of mine, Coco Banks. Coco shares about her journey to self-love and self-knowing, a simple practice she does that honors and makes space for her needs. Some things she finds her empathic ability useful for, and something surprising that she learned from me. Stay tuned. Coco has some precious insights and real-life stories that will inspire you on your own journey as a person deserving of love.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.
Do you crave clarity and insight? Do you sense that your intuition is trying to tell you important things, but you have a hard time trusting it? Do you want access to your own internal wisdom and to understand how it operates so that you can guide your life in ways that are meaningful and satisfying? Well then, welcome. I'm glad you are here. I'm your host, Aimé Cartier. I've been a professional psychic since around 2007. I'm the author of the book, Getting Answers, Using Your Intuition to Discover Your Best Life. I've been teaching others to understand and use their own intuitive and empathic abilities for more than a decade. Join me each week for true stories and tools that will inspire you to take seriously your own inner knowing, that internal sense that you have uniquely tailored to you and designed to not only set you on the roads that are best for you, but also help you avoid the ones that are treacherous. It's time for you to own your intuition.
Welcome, everyone. I have a special treat today. I have been fortunate to have a large number of my good friends study with me over the years. Coco is one such person, Coco Banks, here with me today. We knew each other years before. She ran the French preschool where both of my children went to school, and her son was my son's first best friend. I think they met our kids when Coco's son was two. And even though they moved away from Vashon, where we still live, many years ago, my son still considers her son, William, his chosen brother and BFF for life. In any case, Coco is a gem of a person, and her family were staples in our daily lives when they lived here. And she's also been a student of mine, as I say. So I'm having her on today to talk about her experience and in my empath class and living a satisfying life as a sensitive, empathic being. Welcome, Coco. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Aimé. I'm so glad to be here with you.
We can see each other, so it's like we're having tea together, but the rest of you are just listening. So,
yes.
So I would love to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself. And essentially, it's just helpful for other people to know. I think sometimes people can see themselves in another person if they know a little bit about who you are, what you do, what's your world look like. So what would you like to share with us today about your world, who you are?
Well, I guess more than anything, honestly, I'm an educator, right? Like at the beginning, I was like, well, I studied psychology, right now I'm teaching, but I'm not a teacher. And finally, in my 30s, I fully embraced that identity of I am an educator, I'm a teacher, and right now I'm a dyslexia interventionist and French teacher, French high school teacher. I went from preschool all the way up now to high schooler, and it's not much different, honestly. I'm of Swiss Kenyan origin, and I moved to the U.S. when I met my children's father in Kenya, and We were lucky enough to live in Vashon for a bit. After my divorce, I moved to Florida. And it's during that time, it was a year after the divorce was finalized, that I took your empath class and went on now, I think, to the real next chapter of my life. And been in Florida now for 4 years. We still miss Vashon very much, and your family. And William feels exactly the same way as Xylas does about him. So hopefully we'll see you guys physically very soon. But right now that's me.
Excellent. Wonderful. So I also like to give my guests, or to have start out by having my guests tell me one thing that they love about themselves, because this is a practice that we sometimes do in our home. And essentially, because I feel that self-love is the foundation upon which so much can flourish. So I'm going to start by saying one thing that I love about you, Coco, and that is how self-reflective you are. I love watching you ruminate on something that piques your interest. And then eventually, when it settles, you come up with a plan and then you put it into action and execute it. And it's just so fun to watch the self-reflective place from which things grow in you and your life. And it's just truly a pleasure to watch you unfold. And I also love knitting with you on in person or on FaceTime, as we sometimes do. So
I love the knitting. Thank you so much for those kind words, Amin, because the rumination, I've actually learned to love this year. Really very recently, I've come to accept it as, you know, always wondering if there's something I could do better to shorten the rumination period to actually get to the action part.
And finally, how satisfying.
I'm like, no, I like this. Exactly. I like this. It's who I am. So I'm at this stage where I love a lot about me. And I'm so happy to hear myself say that. I love my ability to adapt to change. You know, and also, but mostly to always put compassion in people before ideology. That, I think that's my favorite part of me.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love it. What a inspiring example. So good to hear.
Thank you.
Okay, so you did your Empath Intuition University with me, which I most recently renamed to Claim Your Empathic Superpower. You did it with me, as you said, I guess it was 3 years ago now. So can you start by giving us a snapshot of where were you when you started my programs? Maybe energetically, or how were you feeling about yourself and your sensitivities, or just being in the world in general?
So it was exactly a year after my divorce was finalized.
Okay.
Moved to a new state under quarantine. So that was a lot for many of us. And I think I did love the fact that I had that with me during that time. It really, thank God, like, you know, how you just have blessings that fall from the sky. That was definitely that one blessing. That and my dog. Thank God. I'm at university and the dog. And what else? And I was, definitely a lot of self-doubt, not trusting my own voice, not knowing my own voice, and not being able to make decisions. So I mean, it wasn't just the rumination; it was really the stalling and just in fear. And you know, for the first time in my life, I had to navigate life alone and do all the adulting on my own, without a partner, without a parent, and that was absolutely terrifying.
Got it. Got it. So what were the biggest take-homes for you? I know, I'm just giving context here because we started together in March of 2020. So everybody kind of knows what 2020 is synonymous with and what a impactful year that was for every one of us. But So what were the biggest take homes for you during our time together or from the course?
Oh, the biggest one was the egging. I call it that, you know.
Yeah.
So learning that a lot of stuff that I was feeling was not my stuff. That was huge. And that, I think that's what started this new period in my life where I started understanding what my true voice was and recognizing what my voice was and eventually recognizing what was not my voice, right? You know, and being part of a cohort where you heard other people's experiences as we went through, because it was, you know, through we had every 2 weeks, I think, we'd meet. And in the middle, we'd have chats with like two other people in our small group.
Partner,
so there was always a weekly check-in, and just knowing that, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one who's going through this.
Totally.
That really made a big, and something you said in one of the lessons, this is not true for you. I love that expression so much. And I always think of you. Like, so it's so wise when you say, you know, this is not true for you. So someone saying what they believe is their truth, and yet it doesn't resonate. And I know I came from a place of, you know, heavy judgment of people sometimes when I heard something they'd say, and I'd be like, no, that just doesn't line up. I don't believe you. But now understanding that, well, just because I see that does not mean the person is aware that they're not in the in their truth at this moment. That was a huge revelation.
Okay. Okay. So what I need remembering too. So in the context when I said that is not true for you, what was I talking about specifically? I mean, I get what you mean right now. What essentially you understood
well,
that
you used to tell me that as a friend, and I'd be like, okay, babe. Then when I took Empath University with you, and you know, we were going through the egging, and we were explaining our experiences and how we were starting to actually feel what our true voices were. But also recognizing that when we're interacting with other people and they're very steadfast about something, but it doesn't sound right to us, or I feel like you're lying to me, but understanding with grace that they're not lying.
Gotcha.
It's just because I feel energy, because I'm an empath, I understand this is not based in truth, but it doesn't mean that this person is consciously lying to me.
Got it. Yes, totally, totally. I know exactly what you're talking about now. Okay, so giving a little bit of context for you listeners, when the essence of one of the main tools that I teach my empaths and is also available in my Empath Core Tools program, that is an on-demand thing, is what we call egging. And essentially, it comes down to two tools, which is clearing your energy and then creating a natural boundary for yourself. And I just call this egg because that's the shape it looks like for me. So it comes to be this terminology for myself and all of my students where we talk a lot about eggs. We're not really talking about eggs. We're talking about our boundary, our energetic boundary, but we call it egging or setting your egg or all kinds of things like that. So it's like the foundation of, I feel, how to flourish as an empath in the world and not feel as though you have to hide away. You can actually be in the world and still be within your energy instead of downloading everybody else's in your space. And it's confusing. Like Coco mentioned, it's such a beautiful example. One of the things you said about how what happens inevitably always in my programs is my students start to discover themselves. And that is part, one of the biggest reason is because for the first time in their lives, and I went through the exact same process myself when I first taught myself to do these tools in the early 2000s, all of the sudden you have this experience where you are in control and you can actually create space for yourself that is just you and your energy. So you begin to know, oh, wow, this is what I feel like. And then this is what I feel like when it's me and someone else's energy. And you begin to be able to tap in to what you have so wonderfully exemplified, even in our opening comments here, of the beauty and uniqueness of you and who you are and what is authentic to you, even though we all have people all around us with opinions who may be similar or different, depends. You get tools that allow you to tap into you. So that's one of the little contexts that I want to give. And then the other one related to what you just said, Coco, about what is true for you. This is just another, I love that you brought this up because this is something I probably would have never thought of to say. But one of the things that happens with empaths is because we can just so easily read vibration and we can feel it in our skin, we have this innate ability to understand when there's something incongruent is one of the ways that I talk about it. And sometimes what it feels like is that person is telling you something, but it is not true. And you can, as an empathic being, you feel the incongruency. So it's uncomfortable actually, and it can come out in all kinds of ways. And I have so many fun examples over the years of how it arises in my students. But the essential piece that you're talking about, Coco, is this thing that I mentioned in class of, even though as an empathic being, you can sense that incongruency, it does not always mean that a person is trying to deceive you. We each, every single one of us, goes through our own process of honesty with self. And sometimes we're just not even ready to see that truth. I mean, I could go on about examples that I've seen in my life. It's not, so the important thing for empaths to understand is it's not always, when you feel that incongruency, or what I call it, we have a natural truth meter, empaths do. It doesn't mean that the person in front of you is actually trying to deceive you or lie to you. Sometimes that happens, but I think there's actually a larger, there's the situation is more common that they're just not really internally ready to face or make that change yet within themselves. And that is a right that each of us get. Like, we all get to decide when we're ready and how long it takes us while we're like, not going to do that. Until right. All of a sudden they're like, actually, I'm going to do this. And this is the best. So thank you for bringing that up, because it would have not ever occurred to me to say, but it is something very useful that empaths do for themselves. And I think the most interesting piece is that you can also turn that truth meter on yourself. So, for example, you can say things out loud to yourself to see, does that sound true? I have used this for so long. I mean, the mind comes up with all kinds of ideas, but once you say it out loud, you're like, actually, no, I'm not going to do that. Or that is like a total crazy BS idea, or it's just not true, not relevant. So thank you again for that example.
Thank you for teaching it.
My pleasure. So I would love to know, you mentioned a little bit about, well, you've talked about the self-discovery that happened as well. Is there any other, what other impact did this knowledge have on your life, either then or as it continues on into the future?
You know, that work, I came out of that work on just renewing my relationship with God.
Mm.
And understanding that I am worthy of unconditional love, God's unconditional love. And that I still carry, and I feel it's that truth for every human being. But when you really feel it and know it, you extend more grace to yourself. You put yourself first, and that's okay, because you also understand that the better you are, the better the world is.
Totally.
So, you know, even with my children, I understand if I need more sleep, that's my priority. I love you, and probably today just gonna eat pizza because I need to rest. I can't cook a full meal for you. There's still food, but you know, this is important. So I don't judge myself as harshly. And that's why now I understand that it takes me a long time to mull over new ideas and new practices. And that's okay. That's who I am.
Totally.
And I extend myself that grace and acceptance. And instead of changing myself, I try to find the tools to support this for me so I can keep functioning in this world, and just have those scaffolds that I'm creating for myself.
Beautiful, beautiful. That is one of the things that I have talked about in a recent episode too, just bookmarking. And I love your reference of one, self-acceptance, because truly that is so key for so many things. And also something that a lot of people walk away from when they do this work of like, this isn't a liability as sometimes empaths feel when they first start working with me. It's not like a thing that you need to overcome or this terrible thing. You just need to know some tools so that you can manage it. And then there comes this very deep acceptance of it's perfect for you to be exactly as you are. And as you pointed out so beautifully, to care for yourself. And furthermore, I love what you just said about being worthy of unconditional love and that connection with the divine. I mean, just that makes my heart so happy just thinking that that is the fruit of our time together, that deep connection that you already have with this benevolent source.
But you know, you emulate that though in your life, Imi, is you carry that. And that's the one thing I've always admired, you know, in you, like from the beginning, is that, you know, you are your own protector in a way. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't mess with Imi because Imi's got her back, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So beautiful. So right now, I'm not teaching my longer 7-month empath program, the one that Coco did, but I do have an on-demand course where you can learn all of the essential tools that I feel that every empath should know to thrive instead of hide, and some of them that we've just talked about here, or the main ones we've talked about here already. But I will do some. My 7-month program, anyway, I can't really say anything concrete about it right now, but it hasn't died forever. Just know that if you're listening. But in the meantime, I have something for you. It just is maybe changing shape, morphing a little bit. But I've always been really keen on, because I've done these very long programs, and a lot of times people are like, do you have anything 4 weeks or 6 weeks or anything? And I hear that, but I have always been really, I guess one way to put it is I have a really high value on the longevity of what I teach. And that's why I've always done these longer programs, because it's an investment. They're not cheap, but also it lasts a lifetime. And that is important to me, that each one of my students walk away with these tools that are now theirs, that they make their own, that they use, that transform and are impactful in their lives. So because you took my class 3 years ago at this point, I'd love to hear, do you have any real life examples of how you've used these tools and to what end, even recently?
Well, first I wanted to, you know, the educator in me loved what you did about, telling us to actually draw what we're visualizing. And I go back to that now because I can automatically egg, especially when I'm now a virtual high school teacher. And sometimes we run into, you know, academic integrity incidents. And those are very hard conversations to have with students, you know, because I'm asking, well, what process did you use in this assignment? You know, even though I'm saying, I have a feeling you cheated, but I'm not going to say it because I need to give you a chance to explain what's happening. But you never know how it's going to be received. And it's really an uncomfortable call. And I immediately visualize how I created my egg. And and that also takes the ego out. So even if I'm dealing with someone who reacts in an offended manner, I still remember to extend them the grace that, first of all, this is still a teenager who's accepted to take my call and is actually on this line to discuss, and I'm here to help them further, you know, in their education and learn the language, and I'm here to support them, not just, you know, you shouldn't do this. And so I visualize the egg immediately, and I feel like my students also sense that, and they sense that compassion and grace coming through. And so those potentially, you know, just heavy conversations end up with a positive outcome. Where now I remind them that I'm there to support them. But I always visualize it, but immediately, because I spend hours on making different drawings of what an egg looks like, hearing what other people in the cohort said their eggs look. I'm like, ooh, I like this.
I'm going to add that.
Yes. And it makes a very big difference. I appreciate the automaticity of it now. And I think, you know, as the years go by, it just comes automatically. And I'm in that space after one deep breath. And I'm more present for others because I'm not in the ego. I'm not in a space where I can get offended because I'm separate from that.
Right. Beautiful. I thank you so much for bringing that up because it's something that I always insist on. What Coco's speaking of is I always encourage my students to draw with every lesson, draw, or even you can write, you can doodle, whatever, however it works for you. But for me, like I said about the longevity, I'm really interested in all of the ways that each of us can integrate these tools. And I think adding another thing aside from me just telling you these things and the practicing, which is a big part of my programs, it's not just me telling you, it's you're expected then to practice and then you come back and tell us about it. So there's that built-in accountability, which is just supportive, I think, because you know, Amy is going to ask you how this went, what happened, what you discovered. So, but I love you mentioning the drawing piece because I continue to have that in all of my programs, encouraging people to, and it's amazing what Coco is mentioning, you know, the process that I teach of egg, as we call it, is very simple. And it's just amazing to see the variety of what people come up with, like what their eggs look like, what is in there, what the outside is, all kinds of different things. And so some of my favorites that I always think of is one of my students once, hers was made out of flowering cherry branches. There've been so many, a student that had like rotating parts in the middle and all these different kinds of things. So it's actually can be a really creative process. And and I love that you still use that. So beautiful. So another thing I wanted to bring up because it's kind of, I guess I would call it like a foundation of what I teach, even though it's not precise, but it does kind of ping some of the things that you and I were just speaking about. But I remember when you were taking this class, and you've alluded to it as well, but you described how our Wednesday evening classes were just this really delicious time for yourself. And you had just such a lovely way of describing how it was carving out a space for yourself to learn new tools, talk about who you are, but also just to be with yourself and your learning. And so I would love if you could embellish a little bit of how that felt, but also, is this a practice that you've continued forward in your life? Like, I know that we're not meeting for class regularly anymore, but have you continued to devote time to yourself in this way that our time together modeled? And if so, tell us.
Yes, no, you're right. That was because you gave us homework, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to carve out the time even before we started meeting to make sure I did it. and then once we're in the space together, you know, with others who've taken that time, you really, I think, it, you know, at least for me, I first wanted to make sure that I was accommodating to others. That's where it first came from.
Okay.
And then seeing that I'm doing this for me and it's okay to just do this for me. it sounds crazy now, right? Because I'm very good now at doing stuff.
I want a little blow a little horn here.
And being very aware. Well, no, because it's the same thing, right? The only way I'm going to have patience for a teenager who's convincing me that there's no academic integrity incident is if I am, if I have eaten enough, if I have rested enough.
Totally.
If I'm in a good space myself, then I have the patience for you. It doesn't matter how great my visualization of an egg is. If I'm not taking care of myself, I'm not going to be that kind
100%
to others. So now it is a priority. I enjoy those moments. Sometimes it's in the mornings. I've also learned I'm not someone who likes to stick to a schedule.
Mm.
I like structure.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like, the ability to move things around, the feeling mm-hmm. of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I'll have my time by myself at lunchtime, sometimes early mornings for a week and meditation, but other times it's in the evening. I give myself the allowance to do that.
Beautiful.
And I also give myself the allowance to prioritize what is important to me.
Mm.
So now when I make my list for the day or for the next day, I say, what is the first item that needs to leave my head? Like, it doesn't matter if this is important for my job. Mm. While I'm doing this, will this other item keep bugging me?
Mm.
And I'm going to give you a beautiful example of this is why, this worked out so beautifully. I'm supposed to work and do grading. And my daughter had, a breakout, skin breakout on her face. And mm-hmm. it was starting to really, bother her. And I didn't know what to do. And I was like, that's my priority today, because that's not going to leave my head until I have something, a plan sorted out. So I forgot everything else. And I gave it 10 minutes, made a call to the dermatologist. They didn't have an appointment for 2.5 months.
Okay.
And then it's like, okay, what else can I do? And the lady I used to take her for facials to lives now 2.5 hours away. So we're not able to take her there.
Okay.
But I sent her a text and I said, listen, do you have a Saturday that we could come over to your home, because her practice was in her home,
mm-hmm.
and we'll drive over because she really needs to see someone and it's starting to affect her.
Mm-hmm.
And she responded, yeah, okay, I'll let you know in a couple of weeks. We found the date. I said, perfect. She said, you know what? Why don't you make a weekend of it? Come with your kids and stay at our house.
Hmm.
So we just came from this amazing weekend where we went Friday night, had a lovely dinner and conversation. Saturday morning, my daughter got her facial. My son went on a boat trip with her husband.
He saw
a hammerhead shark. He saw dolphins, stingrays. He caught fish. It was amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, right?
No.
And I just, when driving back home today, I thought this all came from me making sure I dealt with what was a priority in my life and listening to my inner voice and not what the outer world is telling me is important. And that's
so, so good. So good. And of course, the grading got done.
Didn't
fall to the wayside and never get back to you. Oh my gosh, so good. And I have to tell you all, you don't know this, but I know that these kinds of sea creatures are like the reason that her son lives. So it's not, yes. it's not a small yes. thing to say that he saw this. It's like, kinds of experience. So.
But I was laughing because I said this all came from wanting to give my daughter a facial.
So good. Everyone got what they needed. Weekend away, facial, sharks, and the grading got done. So good.
Yeah.
So, so good. And it's such a good example. It's kind of the thing that comes in the topic of self-care, and the or at least the way that I teach it, and how you're, I think it underscores one of the things that I frequently talk about is it's important to pay attention to that. Like you just said, of like, when you are paying attention to your body, when you are caring for yourself, it actually makes you a better person. It makes you more gracious. It makes you more forgiving. It makes you all of these things. And even if nobody else understands why you needed to prioritize dealing with your daughter and her skin, even if nobody in the whole world would understand that this is a priority, if you understand that that is your priority, then that is the only thing that you need to understand in order to move forward of it. And it's such a perfect example, because you doing that made all these other amazing things happen.
Yes. Yes. And plus, you know, solidify the friendship, right?
Totally.
Yes, I would have never gone up there for a weekend. Otherwise, right? There would have never been, you know, I mean, it just came together.
So beautiful. Yeah,
from listening to that voice that told me this is your priority.
So good. Okay, so this is one of the reasons why I have other people on my show, because I think it's so useful to hear other people's perspective and wisdom as well. So listen to Coco. Do whatever is on your priority list first as well, even if nobody else gets it. So good. So good. So let me just glance at the time here. Okay, we're totally great. Okay, so I'm interested, maybe you already touched on this a little bit, because we did talk about the truth bit, but was there anything that surprised you that you learned from me or my classes? That was, I think that explains itself, that question.
Well, definitely that this is not true for you. That really just blew my mind, honestly. And another thing was understanding that a lot of what I thought was me was not. And understanding the greatest gift, honestly, was I now here today, 3 years later, I know my voice. That's huge, you know. So. I always thought I did, but now I know it and I trust it. And I'm forgiving to myself. So even if I make mistakes, like, it's okay. That's what we're supposed to do. Growth mindset.
Totally. That is how we learn.
Yes. And that's my favorite mantra in the car. It's like, oh, this is not true for you. Like, I'm wondering, like, who just passed me? What's happening? Stuff was this. I finally picked a master's degree. I'm finally, you know, doing very purposeful work that fills my heart with joy, and that is perfectly aligned with who I am, what I've always felt I should do. That's a real gift.
So beautiful. So good. Excellent. Let's see. We've talked about this a little bit, but is there anything that you wanted to share about how being empathic affects your day-to-day life?
How being empathic in my day-to-day life.
So,
I definitely have to stay connected to nature. It's a need, and I cannot have vapid conversations or interactions. Like, those deplete me completely. And I used to feel I need to make a bigger effort to be part of this, you know, this world, this more capitalistic world where, you know, there are some. They're the niceties and they're just those empty conversations you have because that's how it's supposed to be. And now I understand it's not for me. You know, I may be in a beautiful cocktail dress there, but the rest of it is just so draining to me that it's not for me. I would rather sit by the lake, you know, what's up with my sister. Just keep my world. I understand what fills my heart with joy, what fills me. And I've stopped looking at the, you know, what I first thought, you know, the shiny stuff that I thought would make me happy, that I should try and mold myself to fit into. That's no longer interesting to me.
Beautiful.
And because I accept it's not my story. It's not true for me. This is not my story. I'm going to think of it other way.
So good. I love it. I love it. And nature is one of the topics of our class in my longer empath programs, of how it affects empaths. I actually think it's good for every single human alive, but very profound for empaths. So I love it. I can literally picture you sitting by the lake with your hat chatting with your sister on the phone.
But you know, one image of you that always sticks, you as a friend who fully understood me, was the time I told you how grateful I was for all the help you had, you know, just before we were leaving Vashon. And I was done. And I just looked you in the eyes and you were like, yes? Because I was like, I have something important to tell you, right? And I felt I had said it all. And then I was like, that's it. And you got it. And it was without words. And I think that is that's what an empath is, right? There is so much that's in the unsaid.
So true.
Yeah, and you get that.
And it's very loud for the empath. For everyone else, it looks like nothing is going on. But for the empath, there is either a very loud conversation happening or just a very meaningful one that nobody else can hear.
Sorry. I mean, you could torture me with silence, you know, like aggressive silence. Oh my God.
I did?
That's like... No, not you. Oh. I'm saying just in general. Oh. That's like calling me the B word and everything else. If you just send me aggressive silence, that can just destroy me.
Totally.
So that's what I have to egg again. Because again, in the world of the unsaid, right? It's so big.
So loud. So loud for a non-empath or for an empathic person. It's not just... And I think, you know, partially it's because we're so attuned to emotions. But also... I mean, the biggest reason is because it's not just happening out there. It's actually entering your body. So all of a sudden you are filled with this silent aggression when you don't know how to do it. And it's very uncomfortable, to say the least, about the experience. So I love it. Great examples. Okay. So let me just see here if there's anything else. Actually, is there anything surprising that you realized that your empathic ability was good for? I've talked a lot about the challenges of being empathic, and in my last episode and in the previous episodes that we talked about empathic ability. But is there anything? I also do a whole class and more on the practical uses of empathic ability in my longer programs. And so either it comes from something that you learned, or either in my class, or maybe just being an empath in the world. Is there anything? What do you realize that it's good for?
You know, what I've realized, because in this world, right, there's a lot about being an empath that's not necessarily valued or recognized, or, you know, like, what's your added value, really, you know, just by being. But I have found just your presence does a lot. And I've even been told that.
Mm.
So I understand that just being present and holding space, but also now making sure that I'm also in my wisdom and my discernment. Mm. And that's how I can actually help better. But just with my presence, I bring a lot of value to the space.
Beautiful.
And, you know, so once you recognize what you're made for, right, what your purpose is, and you know it, that's the value.
Yeah.
And you value it and you recognize it and you understand, I am here. That's what I'm supposed to do. So I'm not frazzled anymore. I'm not trying to, you know, think, what else can I do to be of use? No. This is what I do. And then I'll go and rest and do this again, because that's what, at this moment, that's what I'm supposed to do. But I also have the discernment now of knowing when to remove myself, or, you know, when to egg up.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. You can't imagine.
You might have noticed, I love egging up.
I know. You can't imagine the amount of memes we share. In my classes, we're always connected via WhatsApp with group texts too. So all kinds of fun.
My favorite story of someone in our cohort was when they said, like, for 3 days, they believed they wanted to study architecture because somehow someone, and that was their story.
Totally.
And after 3 days, they're like, what was I thinking? And you know, through the empath of university, they understood exactly what that moment was, that they had just taken on somebody else's stuff. that was so revealing to me.
So revealing. So that's such a good story. And just give you the whole picture. In the class, one of Coco's fellow students was around somebody who was studying architecture. Like, this was somebody that they came in contact with who they were like really excited about it, just like totally jazzed about it. And all of a sudden, the empath, my student, was like, oh my gosh, should I study architecture? I mean, it's the thing that happens when you're empathic. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so glad personally that I discovered that I was empathic all those years ago. And that I sometimes even just knowing that you're empathic makes a huge difference. Because when you are empathic, you may, as my student did, spend 3 days thinking, do I need to study architecture? Oh my gosh, should I be doing this? Before you realize, oh wow. I mean, then by the time she was here in our class, she had the tools to be able to discern, to create her boundary, to clear her energy. And all of a sudden she was able to realize, oh my gosh, that is literally not me. I do not need to study architecture because that is not who I am and what I'm interested in. But you feel it in your own skin. One of the things that frequently comes up at some point in time or with empaths is this feeling of understanding. I've had students describe it as, I always felt like such a chameleon because I could get along with anyone and I was like all in to whatever it was that they were in. And then I would see my other group of friends and I was all in to whatever it was they were into. And sometimes, you know, in adulthood or even while it was going on, this caused like a hiccup inside because they were like, am I being fake? What's going on here? But the truth is, for an empathic being, if you're sitting next to, I think one of the examples that I just gave recently in another podcast that I've done on empathic is when I was sitting next to my sister and she's all into baking and she's loving paging through this recipe book. And I'm like, oh, that sounds wonderful. Like, I hate baking. I like really hate cooking. But for a moment, you get to enjoy their enthusiasm. So it's once you understand that about yourself, you're like, oh, at least in the case of these students of mine too, you're like, I'm not a fake person. I actually can deeply understand and feel what those around me feel, which makes me understand what it is like to be into this thing or that thing. And it's actually one of the perks, as long as it doesn't control your life or you're not basing your life on the interest of others and not knowing or not accounting for who you are in it.
Yes. But, you know, I'll also admit, like, it's been, I think everything I've shared today has been so positive, right? But it was not a very easy journey, you know, because I encountered resistance within myself as well, and fear, because the fear for me was that at the end I'm egging up and I'm realizing I don't really have a voice. Like, you know, it sounds crazy now, but it's like, well, you know, what if I've been a chameleon for so long that there is no actual, you know, me, right? I need to take from the world in order to feel fulfilled and to feel my value and to feel a sense of purpose. And if I block it all out and try to go inward, I'm not going to find much. That was, you know, a fear. I don't know if I voiced it during her, but that was really because I was very afraid of that. And then as, you know, as life progressed over the last 3 years, sometimes I've had a lot of inner battles. Because I had to undo a lot. So it's, you know, stick with it though. I'm glad I stuck with it.
I love that you voiced that fear even, because I mean, I totally understand it when you're saying it out loud, and because it's not true. I mean, and you've showed us it's not true. And I would say, whoever you are listening to this, it is not true for you either. Even if you don't know yourself at all. And believe me, this is a common thing that I hear with my empaths, and especially when they start my program, of, I feel like my life is based on other people's decisions. I don't even know who I am. I don't even know what I like. And again, this is just literally how you're made. When you are made to have naturally everyone else's energy in your own space, your voice is just one of many, and it's not your fault. And it doesn't mean that you don't have a voice. It just means you've been crowdsourcing literally energetically your whole entire life. And once you learn how to differentiate and choose when you're crowdsourcing or not, then you actually get to hear the voice, even if it's silent at first, even if it starts out tiny with, well, I kind of like to paint my nails this color, or like whatever stupid thing it is. You know, I'm not trying to say painting your nails is stupid, but I'm just saying, like, the voice will arise. And when you follow whatever it is telling you, that little tiny joy, even if it's just painting your nails or reading a book for the afternoon or whatever it is, it actually leads you stronger and stronger to be established in and listening. And all of a sudden, I don't know if it's all of a sudden, I'd be interested to hear what your perspective was, but it feels like, I can't remember because it was so long ago when I started, but it, so I have this feeling of like all of a sudden the channel is on full blast and you're able to hear yourself. Is that your feeling?
So not all of a sudden, because what would happen is a lot of it would run counter to what I had believed.
Okay.
So even people who deplete me, my voice would say, this is not, you know, you shouldn't spend too much time here, you know, in this interaction. But I'm like, nah.
I got this.
Exactly. You don't know what you're talking about. And so you know how you need to be in those situations over and over, and that voice slowly amplifies, because then, you know, like the migraine or whatever it is, and you start equating it with the voice, and you start trusting the voice, and now you start following the voice. But it's a process.
Totally.
That's what life is. You're learning. So that, you know, be gentle with yourself and don't beat yourself up when life shows you that you should have listened to your voice. You're like, oh, you know, I can't do this.
I know.
Just keep at it.
So good. So perfect. So perfect advice. Because also I always say to my students of, that's how you know. How do you think I figured out how all these things work for me? By doing them. And then also my favorite example is meditation and exercise. These are like my core. These are, my life is better when I do them. The only reason I figured that out is by stopping doing them. And then I was like, whoa, same life, feels different. So those are the moments where you start to realize, oh, wow, this actually does make a big difference. And this is important to me, or I don't like interacting with this person. And you know what? I'm going to skip that altogether, as in your example. So I love it. Yeah. So good. So I guess what I would like to perhaps end with, I'm just want to mill over in my brain if there's any questions that I didn't ask you that I wanted to. But actually, do you have anything, two things I'm going to say, I'm just going to put them all in one and then you can choose what you want to answer or how. But is there any way in which you feel that being an empath serves yourself and the world? I'm interested in that. And then also, if there's just anything else that we didn't talk on, that we didn't mention, that I didn't ask you, that it arises for you to mention, I would love to hear.
But I think it goes back to understanding the importance of your presence in a space. Or your presence around someone, and how, like you say, you know, we amplify voices. So I think that's the gift, you know, and having the compassion for others and for, because we first have that compassion for ourselves, and the more we have it for ourselves, the more we emulate that life.
Mm-hmm.
So even just by living your life and having people observe, one thing I have noticed now is how there are people I don't know very well, but then they will contact me and ask me if we can meet for coffee, if we can just have a talk. And now I understand why that is. And And I'm like, yes, okay. But I also understand it's about you. You're searching for something, and I will give you that space. And I love that. I love that. And I think that's why I've always worked with children, because it's unsaid, but it's there. We completely understand why we're in this space together. But more and more women, especially, and a few men, through social interactions, but we haven't really interacted very much, will then text or say, hey, can we meet up? And I'm like, I know exactly why. And yeah, sure, we can definitely meet up, because that's so much a pleasure for me.
It's so much a what?
A pleasure.
Oh, pleasure. I love it.
But I understand it's just so that I can hold that space, so that there's something you need to figure out about yourself. And when I'm holding space with you, it will help you. But it's not about me. But, now that I know this, I feel it makes me giddy.
So beautiful.
And I love hearing people's stories. I love hearing people's stories.
So beautiful. So beautiful. So you don't know this, Coco, but I do. That is the perfect segue into what I'm speaking about in our next podcast episode, which is the final in this particular series on empathic ability. And essentially, it comes down to that we talk a lot about the challenges, but there are some really amazing things of being empathic. And one of them is what Coco has just alluded to, but of being an amplifier and how you can do that and how it helps you, like you're just saying, it makes you giddy. It feels good. And also it serves the world. So stay tuned for that, because next episode we will be talking about that.
Be there.
You can, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes.
I love it. Well, you don't know this. I mean, maybe you do from the tone of this conversation, but sitting down with Coco is a true treasure of mine, and just a love that it's something I love to do. So yay. Thank you for being here. And I'm so glad that now everybody gets to know you as well, because you are just a wonderful being in this world and a treasure. And I'm so glad you are here. So
thank you, Aimee. I'm so glad for you. This is my pleasure. That whatever little I can do for you, honestly, it's always, I'm always here. You have done so much and keep doing so much. Merci.
De rien. Okay, friends, we will see you on the next episode. Goodbye, and see you soon. Today's episode is part of my current series on the topic of empathic ability. You've also got episodes 13, 14, 15, 25, and this one, 26, to listen to and pass on if you are empathic, want tools, or even want to know if you are empathic. Start with episode 13 there. And please share these with your fellow empaths. As I've said, even understanding that you are empathic can be revolutionary, groundbreaking, and aha inspiring. Also, got tons of free resources for empaths on my website, aimeecartier.com, including 44 Signs You Are an Empath. I've also got info on my Empath Core Tools program and a special discount just for my listeners, all in the show notes. All my love. See you soon.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.